ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
Can we just, I could use this one. At least this one too. Okay. So, Shukadeva Goswami is now beginning to speak in reply to Parikshit's questions. I hope you brought these sheets with you, because we're going to...
Okay.
If you don't have one with you, sit next to someone who has one. Because we're going to, starting now, look at the verses one by one, almost all the verses, and we're going to say a few interesting things that are explained in the commentaries. Again, we're studying with the commentaries of Srila Sridhar Swami, Jiva Goswami, and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Of course, Sridhar Swami, he lived before Lord Chaitanya, maybe 150 years before Lord Chaitanya appeared. So, we can't blame him for not openly presenting the exact same philosophy as Lord Chaitanya, or for not mentioning Lord Chaitanya. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted the opinions of Sridhar Swami and took them very seriously. When Ballabhacharya came with his own commentary on the Bhagavatam, and he wanted Lord Chaitanya to hear his commentary, and he told him, "I've corrected the mistakes made by Sridhar Swami." Lord Chaitanya didn't want to hear this recitation. He refused to listen to Ballabhacharya. And he made the comment that, how's it go? Swami Namanile Yini Ganitini. Anyway, Veshyamati. Some, a lady who doesn't respect her Swami. A husband is called Swami. So a lady who does not respect the Swami, I consider her a prostitute. That means that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took Sridhar Swami's commentary to be authoritative. And then Srila Jiva Goswami, the nephew of Rupa and Sanatan, wrote his six Sandarbhas, which systematically present the philosophy of Srimad Bhagavatam in the most authoritative way, according to the perfect opinions of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And then Jiva Goswami, because the Sandarbhas are not in the form of an ordinary commentary. They're not verse-by-verse comments, but they're more like a topical discussion. One topic after another, and then quoting from various, or commenting on various verses to suit the topics. So what Jiva Goswami did after writing these six Sandarbhas, he wrote another one. What he called his Krama Sandarbha. Krama means in order. Which is actually a regular verse-by-verse commentary on the Bhagavatam. So this Krama Sandarbha, we're using here as reference. Prabhupada used this as one of the prime bases of his own commentaries, his own purports. Prabhupada's purports on the Bhagavatam are largely based on Jiva Goswami's Krama Sandarbha, and Sridhar Swami's commentary, and last, the commentary by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, which is very, he presents his own personal, very deep devotional realizations, and it's also a very scholarly commentary. So Jiva Goswami was almost a contemporary of Lord Chaitanya. As an infant, he got the association of Lord Chaitanya in Ramakeli. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is some generations later. He's fourth generation after Narottam Das Thakur. So he was writing his commentary on the Bhagavatam sometime in the middle of the 17th century. So these three commentaries we're going to be looking at. Let's look at the first verse. Okay, again, if you don't have your own copy, sit next to someone who has one. Try to follow. If you have the book, that's best. I'll read the Sanskrit and the English translation. And then we'll read some things from the commentaries that are going to refer back to the Sanskrit word. So try to pay attention to the Sanskrit also. Okay. So first the invocation. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Translation. O my Lord, the all-pervading personality of Godhead, I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. Then text one. Shishuka uvacha variyad eshate prashnak kritaloka hitam nipa atma vitsam atak pungsam shotavyadi shuyak paraha. Sri Shukadev Goswami said, my dear king, your question is glorious because it is very beneficial to all kinds of people. The answer to this question is the prime subject matter for hearing, and it is approved by all transcendentalists. So, Srila Jiva Goswami has something to say here. He makes the comment that Shukadeva Goswami is, by making this statement, he's praising the king for his questions. But he's showing that he's aware of the fact that King Parikshit already has love for Krishna. He's not a neophyte, he's not a materialist. And this is shown by the way that Shukadeva is expressing himself here. Praising him for very, very intelligent, relevant questions. A few verses back, going back into the last chapter of the first canto, where Parikshit's asking his questions, and this is immediately following that, come these answers. Parikshit, at the end of the 19th chapter of the first canto, he asked his questions, and one of the statements he made was, Apime Bhagavan Prita, Krishna Pandu Sutta Priyaha. Certainly, Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, must be pleased with me because he was always very dear. He was always very concerned for his dear friends, the Pandavas, my grandfathers. So, because of that connection, because they're my grandfathers, Krishna, somehow or other, Krishna must be pleased with me also. Anyway, that reveals the fact that Parikshit already is a very, very devoted, very, very dedicated devotee of Krishna. Here, in the second line, Shukadev says that this question is lokahitam. It's beneficial for the whole world. That means that Parikshit's not asking these questions so much for his own benefit. He's already perfected. He's already Krishna conscious. He's already assured. He's confident that he's going back to Godhead. But he's asking these questions really for the benefit of the rest of us. And that's the meaning of the idea behind lokahitam, for the benefit of the world. Sridhar Swami says, this also means, what's the benefit for the world, of the world? The benefit is that the living entities can gain liberation, that they can get free from the cycle of birth and death. That's the idea of benefit, not some material benefit, prosperity, or happiness, love and peace, no. The benefit for the world is that everyone can get out of this cycle of birth and death. So Parikshit's already perfect himself. Later on, beginning of the fourth chapter of the second canto, there's a statement made by Suta Goswami. Vyasa kiriti vichas tatvanishchayam atmanaha upadarya matim krishne autareya satim vyadat. This is The three chapters we're going to study, Shukadeva's giving his answers to Parikshit's questions. And then in the fourth chapter, Parikshit asks more questions. But at the beginning of that fourth chapter, Suta Goswami comments, That after hearing the explanations in the first three chapters made by Shukadev, Tattva Nishchayam Atmanaha, which established the real truth of the self, then Autareya, the grandson of Mother Uttara, or the son of Uttara, rather, fixed his mind, satim, perfectly on Krishna. And then Jiva Goswami is pointing out this word sati. It's the same as, that's a feminine form of the participle sant, which means, well, it means various things. You know, saint is called sant. But it comes from the word to be, to exist. So it can mean perfect or saintly, or it can just mean existing. Sant, or feminine sati. Matim satim. We can understand that as just he fixed his mind in transcendental realization on Krishna. But Jiva Goswami says it also means that already existing, satim. He already had Krishna consciousness. He already had love for Krishna. And now, he already had from before, from his childhood he had love for Krishna. But now, hearing even these very first instructions from Shukadev, his Krishna consciousness became more and more focused, more intense. So he focused and intensified his love for Krishna that he already had from before. And Shukadev also says that your questions are atmavit sammata, approved by atmavits, the great transcendentalists who have realized the soul. It means either their own self, the spirit soul, or they've realized the super soul also. Different classes, different kinds of transcendentalists. According to Vishnu Chakravarti, Shukadeva Goswami is saying that he's sitting in the assembly and some of the greatest sages in the universe are present, including Vyasadeva and Narada. Parashuram is there. Other great sages are there. Parashara, Vyasadeva's father. Bhrigu. So, Atmavitsamata means that these great sages who are sitting in the audience here, they all agree. They all approve of your questions. Just like I'm glorifying them. I'm sure they agree with me. All these great sages. Lokahitam. This can mean two things. For the benefit of the world. Your questions are glorious because they're asking about Krishna and the topics of Krishna are all beneficial for the whole world. Or, as Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti points out, even the questions themselves benefit the whole world. Even just the question, what to speak of the answers, even the questions you're asking. If anybody hears these questions, their life will become perfect. What to speak of the answers? I mean, the Bhagavatam could stop now, even without any answers. Just the first canto, that's enough. Just Parikshit's 10 verses. Just a few questions he asks are so relevant, and they're so Krishna conscious that will make anyone's life perfect. That's stated later on, the 10th canto, first chapter. I don't know who's talking here, but there's a statement. Vasudeva kata prashna purusham strin punatihi vaktaram prachakam shrotrims. Tatpara salilam yata. Just like the water that has washed Krishna's feet, in other words, the Ganga and the Jamuna, this water purifies everybody who comes in contact with it. Whether they're sinful people or paramahamsas or someone in between, everybody is benefited by contacting, by touching, or even remembering the water of the Ganga and Jamuna. Similarly, questions, Vasudeva kata prashnaha, questions that relate to the topics of Vasudev. The questions themselves purify three different people. The speaker, who's going to answer the questions, the disciple who's asking the questions, and Shrotrim, anybody who happens to be there listening. The speaker, the inquirer, and the audience. All three are completely benefited. Totally benefited. This also was one of the last instructions that Srila Prabhupada received from his Guru Maharaj in a letter. He reiterated the order, the command that you should go and preach to the, in the Western, in English, in English to the Western world. And he said, anybody, you know, you'll benefit, whoever listens to you will benefit, and anybody who happens to hear will benefit also by your attempt to preach. Shrotavyadishu yakparaha. Prakshit asked certain questions. You see, he asked, yat shrotavyam ato japyam, yat kartavyam nubih prabho, smartavyam vajaniyam va, bruhi yad va viparyayam. He asked Prakshit, Prakshit asked Shukadev, please tell me, at the time of death, what should one listen to? What topics should one hear? And what should one chant? What should somebody do at the time, when the time of death is approaching? What should he remember? What should he worship? And also tell me, what should he avoid doing? So that was his, that one verse is the essence of his questions. So, Shrotavyadishu Yakpara. Parikshit is very relevantly addressing that question in the very first verse. Your question is very relevant because it's concerned with the question of what should a person, especially a person about to die, what should he hear and so on? What should he remember? What should he chant? What should he worship and so on? But, Vishwanath Chakravarti points out, first comes hearing. That was mentioned first in the question by Parikshit, yat shrotavyam. And it's mentioned here, shrotavyadishu, first in the answer. That indicates that the most important, that's the most important question. What should somebody hear? That's the most important thing to decide. What should I be listening to? So Shukadeva is answering the most important question first. What should somebody hear about? And he's going to describe in his instructions in these chapters, these first chapters of the second canto, what the ultimate perfection of life is. Samsiddhi. Samsiddhi is to remember and to attain the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Shukadeva Goswami, although he used to be a Brahmavadi, he's now a very fanatic proponent of pure devotional service. He's not going to actually encourage Parikshit Maharaj to get involved in anything other than pure devotional service. The perfection of life is to remember the lotus feet of Krishna and to attain him at the time of death, or if not before. And everything else is useful only if it leads to that success of life. For that purpose, to ultimately attain Krishna's lotus feet, that means to develop one's revive one's eternal relationship with him. For that purpose, one should hear about and chant about Krishna, his pastimes, his attractive beauty, his devotees, and everything else about him. One should engage in hearing and chanting Krishna Katha so that one can attain Krishna. That's pure devotional service. But we go to the second verse. I'll read the second verse. So just note that Shukadeva Goswami gives the essential answer in the first verse. Although he's going to start talking about other things for various reasons. We discussed yesterday his three reasons. That he wants to establish the fact that devotional service is superior to all other spiritual practices. So he does that by discussing the other practices and comparing them. And to prove that devotional service is supreme. Second, he wants to explain for the benefit of those who are not ready for pure devotional service what they can do to become prepared by gradual elevation. And third, he wants to test Parikshit. Is he really interested only in devotional service, or can I entice him with something less? So for that reason, he's going to discuss these other things,
yoga and different meditations. But notice in the very first verse, he gives his own opinion that the success of life is to remember Krishna, and hearing and chanting. Anyway, this will be emphasized more in the fifth verse we're coming to. That one should remember Krishna, hear about him, remember him, chant his glories. So the second verse. Shotavya dini rajendra rinam santi sahasrashaha apashyatam atma tatvam griheshu grihamedinam. Translation. Those persons who are materially engrossed, being blind to the knowledge of the ultimate truth. There's a mistake here. It can't be leave. It has to be have. Have many subject matters for hearing in human society, O emperor. So, actually there are many different possible answers to Parikshit's questions about what should someone hear and so on. Because it depends. The answer to that question depends on who is hearing. Everybody has different interests. Somebody is ready for and is seriously interested in hearing about Krishna, and someone else is not. So the answer, what you should hear to, depends. And there are different alternative answers. That's what he says here. There are many different. Shotavyanini santi sahasrashaha. There are thousands of different topics to listen to in human society. So, thus, he's going to mention briefly some of these alternatives before he focuses on pure devotional service. But also, Sridhar Swami points out, one of the phrases in the question from Parikshit was, Bruhi Yadva Viparyam. Also, please tell me, what should somebody avoid doing? What's wrong that he shouldn't do? And that's being answered in this question, in this verse. That people talk about all sorts of things. And that's what you shouldn't be doing, talking about all different things. Thousands of topics. Because apashyatam atma tatvam. This is the engagement of those who don't have any self-realization. Who are ignorant of the true nature of the self. Apashyatam atma tatvam. Jiva Goswami says, literally it says, those who don't see the truth about the self. And Jiva Goswami says that means that they don't realize that what we should listen to and what we should discuss is the science of the self. We shouldn't waste our lives and our energy talking about mundane, frivolous topics. We should discuss the important questions of life. Who are we? What is the true nature of the self? Atma tattva. The people ignore the atma tattva. Not that they don't have the capacity, but they intentionally ignore it and waste their attention and waste their time interesting themselves in other topics. Third verse. Let's look at the third verse. Nidraya viyate naktam vyavayena chavavayaha diva charte haya rajan kutumba baraninava. The lifetime of such an envious householder is passed at night, either in sleeping or in sex indulgence, or in the daytime, either in making money or maintaining family members. So, in verse 2, Sugadev switched. He was in the first one, he mentioned what the ideal is, pure Krishna consciousness. In verse 2, he's talking generally about how there's so many other things, other topics people can interest themselves in. And in verse 3, he talks about those who are especially materialistic, those who are very degraded, people who are really low class. They just waste their time sleeping, having sex, and making money. But Sugadev is being very critical here. He's not afraid to criticize. He's not concerned that he might hurt somebody's feelings. He's very blunt and frank here. He's actually condemning anybody who's not engaged in Krishna consciousness, including the pious performers of Vedic sacrifice, the ritualistic Brahmins. They're also condemned as doing not much more than sleeping, having sex, and making money. Envious householders who are just living basically like animals. Sugadev, remember, is an old Brahmavadi. So he doesn't have a very kind attitude toward life in the material world. He's very frank about his dislike of everything in the material world and everybody who's living a life that isn't on the transcendental platform. Okay, we'll move ahead to verse 4. So we're not going to discuss each verse at great length, but there are enlightening comments that I want to point out, so we have to look at the verses. Verse 4. Deha patya kalatradi shuhu atma sanyaishva satsvapi tesham pramatto niranam pashyan api na pashyati. Persons devoid of atma tattva do not inquire into the problems of life. Being too attached to the fallible soldiers like the body, the children, and wife, although sufficiently experienced, they still do not see their inevitable destruction. Asatsu, the fallible soldiers, the wife, children, the body, and so on. Body first, then the children, then the wife. They're called asat. So that word literally means, it's the opposite of sat. We were looking at the word sati, which means real, which means transcendental, or just existing. And the opposite of that is asat. These fallible soldiers are asat. And that is explained in various ways by the commentaries. One is that the body and all these relatives and other things that are connected to the body, they're unreal. The body is not the self. It's not that it doesn't exist. We're not Mayavadis saying that everything is just imagination. But any conception that's based on connection with this material body is an unreal conception of life, because the body is not the self. You're identifying with something that's not you, or that doesn't have any real temporary connection with yourself. That's unreal. Is one's identification with the body and bodily relationships. So that's one meaning of asat. Another is, asat means asadhu. Impure, contaminated. Because these other people, your wife and your children and all your friends, if you're not a Vaishnav and your wife and children and friends are not Vaishnavs, then they're bahirmukh. They're atheists. Godless. Materialists. And therefore they're asadhu. Unsaintly. Degrading association. That's another meaning of asat. Another meaning of asat is that they're incompetent. They can't protect you. You think they're your soldiers, but they can't save you. They can't do anything ultimately to save you from birth, from disease, old age, death, and rebirth. So they're incompetent soldiers. That's another meaning of asat. And then by contrast, according to, this is Vishwanath Chakravarti, this means, on the other hand, a pure Vaishnav, doesn't become bewildered like the materialist. The word in the verse is pramatta. Deluded, bewildered. But a Vaishnav doesn't become deluded by his body, by his family, by his social relationships. Because he knows that the body and everything connected with the body are meant to be used in the service of the personality of Godhead. With that attitude, the Vaishnav conquers even time and death. Death cannot defeat him. Time cannot defeat him. Okay. Anyway, in these verses, 2, 3, and 4. Shukadeva Goswami is very critically making comments about anybody who is not a Vaishnav. And Vishnu Chakravarti, writing much later, agrees with this. We read in Vishnu Chakravarti's comments on the Bhagavad Gita that, as far as he's concerned, real spiritual life begins with nishkama karma yoga. Yes, we can accept those who are doing Vedic sacrifices as some sort of spiritualist, but only when they have no material motives. If they're performing sacrifice to get a better situation in the material world, then they're condemned as materialists. By Vishnu Chakravarti also. When they do their Vedic duty and perform their sacrifices without any motives, then they're called nishkama, karma yogis, and they can become purified. They're on the beginning, they're on the first step of the yoga ladder, on their way up to purification. And they can progress, they can become pure, their consciousness can become purified, so they can become gyanis, and then yogis, and then bhaktas, like that. Okay. So that's the first four verses. Are there any questions so far? All I know from Baladeva Vidyabhushan is that there were some verses about the killing of Putana, and some verses about the description from the Gopi Gita of how the gopis were attracted by the sound of Krishna's flute. There's some mention of that in Baladeva Vidyabhushan's commentary in Tapasandarbha. Okay, the exact verses are not mentioned. Okay, yes. Yes?
This stage of nishkama
yoga. Nishkama karma yoga, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, actually Shukadeva Goswami is going to be discussing that. So maybe we can pass on answering that and how someone becomes elevated from karma up to being ready to start meditating on the Supersoul. But that's going to be discussed in these two chapters by Shukadeva Goswami in some detail, how the process works. So I better let Shukadeva answer it. Okay. I think we'll move on because we're a little behind schedule here. Verse 5.
Tasmad Bharata Sarvatma Bhagavan Ishvaro Harihi Shrotavya Kirtitavyascha Smartavyaschetchataboyam. O descendant of King Bharata, one who desires to be free from all miseries must hear about, glorify, and also remember the personality of Godhead, who is the Supersoul, the controller, and the savior from all miseries.
Okay, so this is the essential answer. This is Shukadev's own opinion, that this is what somebody should do. Anybody, but especially someone who is facing death. He should, with all enthusiasm, wholeheartedly, simply engage himself in hearing about, chanting, and remembering the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari. So there's various words here used to describe Krishna. Sarvatma, Bhagavan, Ishwaraha, Harihi, these four words. Sridhar Swami points out what the significance of each of them is. One should remember that person who is Sarvatma, the soul of all. He's the supreme controller. He's Bhagavan. And according to Sridhar Swami, that points out that he's the most attractive, the most beautiful person. Possessor of all opulences, therefore he's all attractive. He's Ishvara. He's the proprietor of everything. Therefore, it's mandatory. It's not optional. There's no choice. You have to remember him. Otherwise, you will not become perfect. There's no option. There's nobody else or nothing else that you can meditate on that will give you the complete success of life. And he's Hari because that name indicates that he removes the bondage. He frees the devotees from their bondage to the cycle of birth and death. And Ichitaboyam, those who want fearlessness. So Sridhar Swami says fearlessness means liberation. Those who want to become free from fear by not having to take birth or die again, they should become Krishna conscious. Okay, that's the basic understanding of this verse. But Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur is not satisfied with just that. He wants to give us a higher understanding. And even Prabhupada in his translation has explained it this way, the same way as Sridhar Swami. But Vishwanatha Chakravarti gives another interpretation, or actually three interpretations. He says there are three kinds of devotees, three kinds of devotional service. And this verse is actually subtly or implying what each of those devotees have to do on the three different levels. We have some people practice devotional service, but their motive is to become liberated, just to get their own salvation. They're moksha kamis, but they worship Krishna. They meditate on the Supreme Person for the purpose of getting free. And then there are the Raghuruga bhaktas, who are spontaneously attracted to Krishna in pure love. And then there are the devotees who are still conditioned, but are practicing sadhana bhakti, the Vaidhi bhaktas. Three different kinds of devotees. Of course, Rupa Goswami, in his Nectar of Devotion, only recognizes the second two. Because Rupa Goswami is describing the science of pure devotional service. He doesn't even consider mixed devotion. But, the first category is what we would call, what Jiva Goswami describes as Jnana Mishra Bhaktas. They're worshipping Krishna, but their motivation is to get knowledge for their own liberation. And they're just using devotional service for that purpose. Of course, then they become co-opted. They, you know, by attraction to Krishna, they'll give up their interest in Jnana and they'll become pure devotees, if they're lucky. Anyway, Vishnu Chakravarti's explanation of this fifth verse, they should, all three these categories of different kinds, these three different kinds of devotees, they should all hear about, chant about, remember Lord Hari, who is three different things. So, and then they all want abhayam, fearlessness, but the three different kinds of devotees understand, they have a different, each have a different idea of what fearlessness is. So, the mixed devotees, the karma, Jnana Mishra Bhaktas who want liberation but are practicing devotional service for that purpose, what their idea of fearlessness is to get liberated, to get free from birth and death. They should meditate on Krishna as Sarvatma, as the supersoul of all living beings. Then, there are those devotees who are actually have love of God, or are very close to it, and they're practicing devotional service, not following rules and regulations, but out of spontaneous attraction. So, what's fearlessness for them? What they're afraid of is that they might forget Krishna for one moment. So fearlessness for them means that they can fix their minds on Krishna unswervingly, not for one moment, not for an eye blink, forgetting Krishna. Nishkampa bhakti. That's their conception of fearlessness. And for that purpose, they should worship Bhagavan. We have Sarvatma, Bhagavan, and Ishvara. So, the Raghunuga bhaktas, they should meditate on Krishna as Bhagavan, the all-attractive, supremely beautiful personality of Godhead, Krishna. And then, we have the sadhakas, Vaidhi bhaktas, who are practicing, but they're still afraid of their past conditioning. And so their idea of fearlessness is to become free from attraction to sense gratification. And so in order to become free, to save themselves from Maya, they should meditate on the Supreme Person as Harihi, as the deliverer or the remover of all their distress. Example of this is going to be mentioned a few verses later, Katranga Maharaj. He's a good example he only practiced devotional service for a few minutes, but he was practicing it. Muhurtat Sarvam Utsrija. In a single moment, he gave up all his material attachments and took shelter at Krishna's lotus feet to save himself from material illusion. Okay, then finally, kirtavyas smartatavyas cha. It says, you know, one should hear, and then also, kirtavyas smartatavyas cha. That means, according to Vishwanath Chakravarti, that the first thing you have to do is hear. But, as soon as you start properly hearing, then immediately you should also start chanting and remembering. It's not that these other processes are only for advanced devotees, you know, 10, 15 years later. Begin your hearing, and then immediately you can also begin chanting, and you can also begin remembering. Or you should. Okay, that's verse 5. We'll look at verse 6. Yes,
ma'am. Up to verse 2 and after verse 5. So, what it deals with the relations in a very general way.
Yes.
In the sense of giving it to them, in the sense of those who are materially grown.
Yes.
Those for one who desire to be free from all miseries. He doesn't touch a particular obstacle.
Particular? Well, he does. We'll find out as we look at these verses and see what the commentaries explain, that he's talking about people on specific levels of development. Not according to the Varnashram system so much, but according to the karmis and the, you know, who are performing ritual sacrifices, and then those who are meditating on the universal form, and those who are meditating on the super soul, and those who are worshipping different demigods. These are different levels of spiritual development. And they're identifiable. They're very clearly distinguished, actually.
In this case, why does he particularly, in verse 3 and 4, brings out the Vihastra, and he almost smashed the activity of the one world in this
world? I don't think he's condemning only the grihasthas, and I don't think he's condemning them because they're grihasthas, but because they ignore their spiritual responsibilities. They're not paying attention to the science of the self. It's just statistically a fact that most conditioned souls are grihasthas. And so, you know, therefore, just to give a typical picture of the conditioned souls, typically they're stuck in a deep well of family life. Anyway, in other places, Shukadeva Goswami is more specific about who he criticizes, but here he's just giving a general picture. Yes, Mother? Yes. Well, but it says, he's talking about which? Grihamedi, yeah. Grihamedi nam, yeah. So, that we can exclude saintly Vaishnav grihasthas. See, literally, Grihamedi, Medi means somebody who performs sacrifice in the home. So, in the Vedic language, that's not an insult to call somebody a Grihamedi. That means, oh, he's a very Pukka Brahman. You know, he does fire sacrifice in his house. But the Vaishnavas use the same terminology as an insult. It's, you know, ritualistic Brahman, materialist. But yes, it's materialistic householders, and it's not that every householder is a materialist necessarily. But statistically, most of them are. Yeah. Yes. Oh yeah, that also. It's another figurative meaning of the word. Is like the beast of burden who's grinding, that's called Medi? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Anyway, we have to allow Shukadev his, if we say prejudice, he's got his personal viewpoint, we have to allow him, everybody can, that's a free world, people can think how they want, and Shukadev is not very kindly disposed to material life in any form. And he has very definite opinions about the uselessness of all kinds of material life. We just have to, you know, humor him or, you know, indulge him, allow him his opinion. Okay. We gotta move on. This is verse 6. Etavan Sankhya Yoga Vyam Svadharma Parinishtaya Janmalavak Parakpum Sam Onti Narayana Smitihi. So in these verses 5 and 6, he's definitely talking about pure devotional service. He's revealing what he considers really important. Translation. The highest perfection of human life, achieved either by complete knowledge of matter and spirit, by practice of mystic powers, or by perfect discharge of occupational duty, is to remember the personality of Godhead at the end of life. So two things are mentioned here, three things. The perfection of these other processes is to come to the point of remembering Lord Narayan. And these other processes are three here mentioned. Sankhya, Yoga, and Swadharma Parinishta. Sankhya, and Sridhar Swami is explaining, Sankhya means philosophical discrimination. The difference between knowing the difference between the self and what's not the self. The difference between spirit and matter. So to be use your intelligence discriminatingly to distinguish spirit and matter, that's called Sankhya. And yoga is the eightfold system of meditation described by Patanjali Rishi, Ashtanga Yoga. Most people are just materialists, but those who are progressive, some of them are philosophically disposed, and they try to find the spiritual nature and distinguish it from matter. Some are practicing yoga meditation. And then there are some who are Swadharma Parinishtaya. That means they're executing their ritualistic duties according to the Vedic sacrificial system. They're karmis who perform Vedic sacrifices, and they're very strictly adhering to their duty. Or in any of the Varnashram orders, they're performing their prescribed duties. They're karmis. So we have the gyanis, the yogis, and the karmis. The perfection of all of these three practices is to come to the point of remembering Narayan. In the end. Now, we translate, probably, your jnana, your karma, or your yoga. If in the end of your practice, as the perfection, success of it, you come to the point of devotional service, that's the perfection of life. It doesn't have to be you have to die to achieve it. And there are examples. Example of jnanis who reached the culmination of their jnana by turning into devotees, like Sanaka Rishi and his three brothers, the four Kumaras. They were jnanis. They went to Vaikuntha on a visit. They smelled the tulsi leaves at Narayan's lotus feet, and their hearts changed, and they became devotees. Or Shukadeva Goswami also, like that. Jnanis who perfected their jnana practice by becoming devotees, remembering Narayan at the end. And then example of yogis who similarly became perfect are the nine Yogendras, the nine sons of Rishabhdev, who later gave instructions to Nimi Maharaj in the 11th canto. They were yogis, but they turned into devotees. So their yoga practice became perfect by their becoming attracted to remembering Narayan. And then one example of a karmi who became perfect that way was King Prachini Barhushet. By Narada's instructions, he was elevated, pulled out of his ignorance and elevated to the position of a pure Vaishnav. So ante, once and for all, in the end, once and for all, no reverting back to your old materialistic nonsense. You may have been a karmi before, you may have been a yogi or a jnani, that's okay, you're excused. But don't, now that you're practicing devotional service and you have tasted the nectar at Krishna's lotus feet, don't go back to this nonsense again. Once and for all. Your life has been changed. Ante. Okay, that's verse 6. Now verse 7. Prabhupada's explanation at the end of life, that's also accepted by the commentators, but they give this alternative explanation as well. 7. Prayena munayo rajan nivitta vidishedataha naigunyasta ramantesma gunanu kattane harehe. O King Parikshit, mainly the topmost transcendentalists who are above the regulative principles and restrictions, they take pleasure in describing the glories of the Lord. Ah, so Vishwanath says this indicates that the total perfection of life, samsiddhi, is to realize the sweetness, the madhurya, of the Supreme Lord's beauty, his personal form, and his transcendental qualities, his rupa and his guna. Rupa madhurya and guna madhurya. This attraction of Krishna's beauty and his transcendental personality is far superior to the attraction of merging into the Supreme Absolute Impersonal Truth, Brahma Sayujya. And that's proven by Shukadeva's own experience. He was already merged in transcendence, and when he heard the Bhagavatam, he was attracted away from that. He found Krishna's devotional service to be far more attractive. So prayena, the word is here, first word in the verse. For the most part, that means there are some exceptions. There are some Brahmavadis, some impersonalists, who hear and chant about Krishna. See, it talks about how, for the most part, those who are actually transcendentalists, not, materialists who are pretending to be sadhus, but real sadhus, real transcendentalists, practically speaking, they're all taking great pleasure in hearing and chanting about Krishna. Practically, for the most part, because Vishwanath Chakravarti points out, Vishwanath Chakravarti, there are some other liberated souls who are on a lower level. They engage in Krishna Katha, but their motive is still liberation. They're hearing and chanting about Krishna to help them get liberated. So that's an inferior position. And the difference of them is that you can't say about them, Ramante Sma. They're not getting transcendental pleasure. If you take this process of hearing and chanting about Krishna and you use it for another purpose, even the purpose of liberation, you won't experience the transcendental bliss that actually comes from pure chanting and hearing. So that's why the prayena is there. Some advanced impersonalists who are even liberated hear and chant about Krishna, but they have that motive of wanting to be liberated, therefore they don't get full enjoyment. Okay. Verse 8. Idam Bhagavatam Nama Puranam Brahma Sammitam Adita Vandvaparado Pitu Dvaipaya Nadaham. At the end of the Dwarpa Yuga, I studied this great supplement of the Vedic literature named Srimad Bhagavatam, which is equal to all the Vedas, from my father, Srila Dvaipayana Vyasadeva. Okay. Brahma Samhitam, equal to all the Vedas. Or two other explanations of Brahma Samhitam. Sammita can mean equal. It can also mean measured, perfectly measured. So it means through studying this Bhagavatam, you can perfectly measure, you can understand properly the Absolute Truth. The Absolute Truth is properly understood in proper perspective by the study of Srimad Bhagavatam, Brahma Sammitam. But Brahma also means Parabrahman, the personality of Godhead Krishna. So another third explanation of Brahma Sammitam given by Jiva Goswami is that the Bhagavatam is non-different, equal to Krishna himself, who is the absolute Parabrahman, absolute truth, in his human form, Narakriti Parabrahmana. Bhagavatam is non-different from Krishna, is a direct sound incarnation of Krishna. That's another meaning of Brahma Samhitam. Aditavan. So Shukadeva, not only was he attracted to the Bhagavatam, But he came home and he sat down with his father and accepted his father as Shiksha Guru, although he didn't take initiation. He didn't bother with that. But he did bother to take systematic instruction and hear from his father and study Bhagavatam under Vyasadeva's guidance. So that proves that the Bhagavatam cannot be mastered just on the strength of your own intelligence. It has to be studied at the lotus feet of a pure Vaishnava. Or the famous statement, I think it's also by Vopadev, our impersonalist friend, that Bhaktiya Bhagavatam Grayam Namedeya Nachatikaya. Bhagavatam can only be assimilated by pure devotion. You can only understand the Bhagavatam by devotion, not by using your own brain and not by studying so many commentaries. Okay. I'll just read verse 9. There's no comments on it. And then verse 10 also.
Parinishtito pinayagunya uttama shloka lilaya grihita cheta rajarshe akyanam iraditavan.
O saintly king, I was certainly situated perfectly in transcendence, yet I was still attracted by the delineation of the pastimes of the Lord, who was described by enlightened verses. In text 10.
Tadaham te bidasyami aha paudashiko bhavan yasya shradatam ashu syan mukunde matiksati.
That very Srimad Bhagavatam I shall recite before you because you are the most sincere devotee of Lord Krishna. One who gives full attention and respect to hearing Srimad Bhagavatam achieves unflinching faith in the Supreme Lord, the giver of salvation.
Tadaham te bidasyami.
I'm going to tell you that same Bhagavatam. That means, according to Jiva Goswami, he says specifically here, that means that Shukadev spoke all 12 cantos. The whole thing. The same Bhagavatam that he heard from his father, which was 18,000 verses, 12 cantos. I'm going to tell you, Parikshit, I'm going to tell that whole Bhagavatam to you now. Even though Parikshit, Sukadev is only starting to speak now in the second canto. He wasn't there in the first canto. Still, he's going to recite the whole thing from the beginning, including the verses that were spoken before he appeared and the verses he hasn't spoken yet to Parikshit. All 18,000 verses. Okay, now text 11.
Etan nirvidyamananam ichatam akuto bhayam Yoginam nirpanirnitam harinam anukirtanam.
O King, constant chanting of the holy name of the Lord after the ways of the great authorities is the doubtless and fearless way of success for all, including those who are free from all material desires, those who are desirous of all material enjoyment, and also those who are self-satisfied by dint of transcendental enjoyment.
Okay?
So Hariya Namanu Kirtanam, he focuses on this one aspect of devotional service. Anukirtanam, the specially focused chanting of Krishna's names. He's glorified the Bhagavatam in general, and he's glorified devotional service in general. Now he's focusing on the fact that there are many different angas, many different practices of devotional service, hearing, chanting, remembering, and so on. But the most important is Hariya Namanu Kirtanam. Vishnu Chakravarti explains this further. The three most important processes of devotional service are hearing, chanting, and remembering. Shravanam, Kirtanam, Smaranam. They're always listed first. But of these three, the one that's most important is Kirtanam, chanting. Because if you just hear, that's not sufficient. If you chant, that includes the other processes. By chanting, you're automatically hearing what you chant yourself. You're automatically remembering at least the sound of the name. So chanting is the most potent process. We can't discuss that in detail now, but that's explained by Sanatana Goswami in his Brihad Bhagavatamrita, why Kirtanam is the most important process. But even more specifically, there's different kinds of Kirtanam.
You can chant mantras, you can chant different prayers, but the most important, most potent form of kirtanam is nam kirtan. And there's different kinds of nam kirtan. So the most important form of nam kirtan is anukirtanam. Hare nama anukirtanam is what Shukadeva Goswami specifies here. What that means, according to Vishwanatha Chakravarti, two things. There's anu in anukirtanam means that you should chant names of Krishna that are suitable for your own personal variety of devotional service. You should chant the names that you, in particular, are attracted to. Or you take initiation from someone, he gives you a particular mantra that suits you. So you do the chanting of Krishna's names that specifically is appropriate for your personal mode of devotional service. And then anu also means constant. Constant and unceasing chanting of Krishna's names. Anu kirtanam. Okay, so Sridhar Swami explains that this is the highest good. It's been absolutely, without any doubt, ascertained that for both the sadhakas and the siddhas, for those who are practicing and those who are already perfect, this is the means for the highest good. For those who are ichitam, for those who are near vidyamananam, and for the yogis. That means the ichitam means people who have desires, vikarmis, have material desires. Near vidyamananam means people who are becoming disinterested in everything material. The people who want liberation, the impersonalists in general. And the yogis, or in other words, gyanis, those who are philosophers. For the karmis, for the persons who want liberation, and for the persons who want knowledge, that pretty much covers everybody except for the pure devotees. They should practice, all of them should practice, Harir Nama Nikirtanam. But Vishwanatha Chakravarti explains these three kinds of people differently. He says nirvidyamananam means the devotees, pure devotees. Those who are disinterested in everything. They don't want anything material, not even liberation. So that means pure devotees, nirvidyamananam, according to Vishwanatha Chakravarti. Ichitam means people who want various material benefits, including elevation to heaven or liberation. They're all under the category of people with desires. The impersonalists and the karmis are lumped together. And the yogis are the aparamas, those who are already self-satisfied. Okay. If they want akutobayam, fearlessness. In pure devotional service, the pure devotional service that's attained by constant chanting in a favorable way Krishna's holy names, one becomes free from all anxiety. Anxiety about what's the proper time and place to do to chant Krishna's names? What, you know, how am I going to worship Krishna? Where am I going to find the ingredients, the paraphernalia for worshiping him? And, you know, I have to make sure everything's clean. I have to be very careful to consider what's clean and what's not clean. And I have to do everything at the right time, right place, with the right things. But when you're engaged in Hari Nama and Kirtanam, you have none of this anxiety. No worries about time, place, what's pure, what's not pure. Akutobayam. Even, Vishnu Chakravarti comments, even the mleches, who hate the devotees and hate Krishna's devotional service, they're attracted to Harinam Anukirtanam. They're attracted to the Kirtan even. Even the gross materialists who are otherwise envious. Okay. Let's look at verse 12.
Kim pramatasya bahubi parokshayaha yanariha varam buhurtam viditam gotate shreyase yataha.
What is the value of a prolonged life which is wasted, inexperienced by years in this world? Better a moment of full consciousness, because that gives one a start in searching after his supreme interest. So, Sridhar Swami and Vishwanath
explain this. There's a dialogue going on between the lines here. Parikshit's asking, look, I only have a few days to live. You're talking about sadhana. What sadhana can I do in 7 days? And the answer that Shukadeva is giving him here is that don't worry. You can waste your whole life in ignorance. Better than a long life wasted in ignorance, even a few moments in Krishna consciousness. Look at Katvanga Maharaj. Well, next verse. Let's read the verse. Katvango nama raja shir gyatve yattam iha yushaha muhurtad sarvam utsvijya gatavan abhayam harim. Again the word abhayam, fearlessness. The saintly king Katvanga, after being informed that the duration of his life would only be a few minutes more, only a moment more, at once freed himself from all material activities and took shelter of the supreme safety of the personality of Godhead. So Katvanga, Prabhupada describes his story. I think everyone's familiar with what happened with Katvanga. He was fighting on behalf of the demigods, and they offered him a benediction. So he said, okay, I'll ask him benediction, but first answer this question, how long do I have to live? And they said, you've got a few minutes. So he responded to that by immediately leaving the heavenly planets and jumping down to the earth. Well, actually, they gave him a chariot to go down to the earth on, an airplane. He immediately went to the earth and spent the last few minutes practicing devotional service on the earth. So that's explained by Sridhar Swami that there's too much passion on the heavenly planets, too much facility for sense gratification. So he immediately left that place and came down to the earth to practice devotional service, even though he only had a few minutes. Because the earth is karma bhumi. That's where you can practice austerities and serious spiritual life. Yeah. Oh, I don't know. Okay. No, I don't know where he went. No idea. Yes? No, the answer was in terms of earth time. Yeah. Otherwise, he could have taken his time, but he actually only had a few minutes. Well, it said moments he had, not even minutes. Okay, let's look at verse 14. Tava pietar hir kauravya saptaham jivita varihi upakalpaya tat sarvam tavat yat samparaikam. Maharaj Parikshit, now your duration of life is limited to 7 more days. So during this time, you can perform all those rituals which are needed for the best purpose of your next life. Well, what we're hearing here is that Parikshit shouldn't feel discouraged. He shouldn't worry. He's got 7 days. Look at Katvanga. He only had a few minutes. You've got 7 days. And Parikshit already knows what's going on. He heard the curse from Sringi, the sage's son. He told him, you insulted my father, and you're going to die in 7 days, a snake bird is going to come and bite you. So he knows that this is, going to happen. And he's just been reminded just now by, you have 7 days. Shukadev just, reminded him about that. But he's aware. Jiva Goswami points out this, Parikshit is very much aware, this is Krishna's arrangement. Krishna is very kindly arranging to bring me back quicker. In 7 days, I don't have to wait years or lifetimes. This is actually Krishna's great compassion on me. So, therefore, Shukadeva is not saying this to make Parikshit feel bad or scare him. He's actually saying it to encourage him. That you've got 7 days to prepare yourself, and that's all we need. And you'll be finished in 7 days, and you can go back to Godhead. Don't feel bad. Upakalpaya tat sarvam. You should arrange everything necessary now. In other words, you should get serious about hearing, chanting, and remembering. Okay, can we look at verse 15 now? Now he's switching the topic. He's going to talk about what somebody should do now, the actual details about what someone should do to prepare himself for death. Antakale tu purusha
agate gata sadvasaha, chindhyad asanga shastrena, spriham dehe nuye chatam.
At the last stage of one's life, one should be bold enough not to be afraid of death, but one must cut off all attachment to the material body and everything pertaining to it and all desires thereof. So this is the answer again to another question. What should a man do who's facing death? That was Pariksit's first question to Shukadev. What should a man who's about to die do? This is the answer. This verse and the six verses following it, verses 15 through 21, are answering that question. But actually what's happening now, Pariksit, Shukadev has first of all recommended pure devotional service centered around hearing and chanting Krishna's names. But not everybody will immediately take to that process. Not everybody is attracted to it. So for the benefit of other people, he's now going to explain a gradual process in these verses. But it'll still be a process of Krishna consciousness, but a gradual meditation on Krishna's personal form. Vishwanath points out there are different kinds of sages present in this assembly listening to this. Some of them are karmis, some of them are gyanis, some of them are devotees of Lord Shiva, some of them are mayavadis. In the opinion of some of the sages present, what somebody should do at the time of death is practice Ashtanga Yoga. Should practice the traditional eight-step yoga system and focus his mind on the supreme self, on the super soul, by that process. So, hypothetically accepting, okay, this is a good method, it's appropriate for some people, Shukadev is going to describe it in the next few verses. How to practice according to the traditional eight-step system, meditation, but meditation on the Supreme Person. Okay. Yes, Bhuma? Well, it's not, I'm sorry if everybody didn't hear this, it seems like Krishna in the Gita, it seems that Shukadev is putting a twist on the traditional system and making it more Krishna conscious. Yeah. But actually, the original yoga system is meditation on Vishnu. That's the original yoga system. And what we read about in the later smritis, even the yoga sutras are just maybe, 5,000 years old. There are older systems of yoga than that. Kapiladeva's instructions to his mother present an older system of yoga meditation than Patanjali's Ashtanga Yoga. And all these other more recent smritis that, describe Hatha Yoga. These are modern systems. Mostly presented by Mayavadis. Impersonalists. But the original yoga system is devotional. Kriteya Jayato Vishnum. In the Satyuga, meditation is the method of practicing devotional service. It's meant for devotional becoming Krishna conscious. Okay? So, okay, one last comment on verse 15. The phrase, gata sadvasa, free from anxiety. This means, I'm sorry, I lost it. Yeah, free from the fear of death. If you're afraid of death, you're going to go to a hospital and you're going to ask them to put you on a resuscitator and keep you alive for a few months, some way or another. But if you're free from fear of death, you're ready to just leave home and march north and drop dead whenever it might happen. So this is someone who's serious about spiritual life. He'll give up that fear of death. Okay, verse 16. Grihad pravajito. Dhira punya tirta jala plutaha
shuchavivikta asino vidivat kalpitasane.
One should leave home and practice self-control. In a sacred place, he should bathe regularly and sit down in a lonely place, duly sanctified. So, Sridhar says, it's important that he leaves home. You know you're going to die very soon. You want to just get out of this world, leave home. Because if you stay home, you may forget your resolution. You may revert back to your old materialistic ways. So he's recommending sannyas. This is the beginning. These verses describe step by step the Ashtanga Yoga system, eightfold step system. He says, dhira. One should control his mind, be sober. And what this implies is the practice of brahmacharya and other austerities. These are the yamas, the basic regulative principles. Like we have our four regulative principles. Brahmacharya is one of them. In the yoga system, they have a variation on that. The yamas, the basic rules and regulations for self-control. That's being described by the word dhira. Okay, punya tirtha jala aplutaha. And then he should go to a holy place and take bath and perform other rituals. This is a description of the second stage of yoga called niyama. Yama niyama. Yama means the basic regulative principles and niyama means the secondary regulations. Like taking a bath. Now, we didn't take a vow when we took initiation, I'm going to take a bath every day. But we understand we're supposed to do it. Take a bath 2 or 3 times a day. Because if we don't, we'll be dirty and go crazy. And we won't be able to maintain the primary regulative principles. So these are the niyamas. The other things you do that support the basic regulative principles. So that's what's being described by the mention of going to a holy place and taking snan, there, bath, and making yourself clean. And then the next thing is vidivat kalpitasane. Arrange a proper seat for yourself. That's the third step of the yoga system, asanas. The physical exercises, but it also means just sitting down properly so you can meditate. The whole purpose of all these 108,000 different asanas, or how many different asanas you might practice, is not just calisthenics, it's not just, you know, for health, but it's to calm down, be able to sit down and start meditating. To free yourself from the mode of passion and ignorance and be able to properly sit and think about Krishna. That's the third step called asana. And vidivat, according to the regulations, there are specific regulations how you're supposed to sit down. Krishna mentions these in the Gita, that you should put the kusha grass, a deer skin on top of that, a cotton cloth, and, you know, properly arrange the seat in a clean place, in a place that's level, and so on. That's verse 16. 17. Abhyasyena manasa shudham trivid brahmaksharam param mano yachet jitta shvaso brahma bijam avismaran. After sitting in the above manner, make the mind. Remember the three transcendental letters. A, U, M, Om. And by regulating the breathing process, control the mind so as to not forget the transcendental seed or that mantra, Om. Okay, so we have three steps covered so far. The fourth step is pranayama, controlling your breath, your breathing. But when we learn pranayama, we learn to chant bija mantra as part of the breathing process. So what's mentioned here is the bija mantra, Om. That's actually alluding to the practice of pranayama, of breath control. It begins with chanting the seed mantra. Brahma bijam avismaran. So one should, why we practice breath control, pranayama, is to settle the mind, to fix, to calm down the mind. By calming or controlling the breathing, the mind becomes stable, calm.
So Brahma Bijama Vismaran. Not forgetting, not letting, the mind is not jumping around deviating, but it settles down and steadily remembers or pays attention to that transcendental sound, Om. Look at 18.
Niyached vishaye byokshan manasa burisaratihi manakarma bir akshiptam shubarte dharaye diya.
Gradually, as the mind becomes progressively spiritualized, withdraw it from sense activities. And by intelligence, the senses will be controlled. The mind, too absorbed in material activities, can be engaged in the service of the personality of Godhead and become fixed to full transcendental consciousness. So what's being described here is the next step, called pratyahara. That means after you've learned how to control your breathing, which brings the mind, calms down the mind, then you have to, now the mind is more or less controlled, next step, stop this engagement in sense gratification. Pull back the senses, like the turtle putting his limbs back in the shell. It's called pratyahara, withdrawing, winding up the senses, pulling them back.
Manasa buddhisarati, is that in this verse?
Yeah. By the mind, which is being directed by the intelligence. When the mind becomes calmed down, stops being so unruly, then the intelligence can take control. And then one can practice pratyahara. One can practice withdrawing his entanglement in sense gratification. This is necessary. One has to take help of higher intelligence. Because you can practice pranayama and other physical exercises for a long time. That's not sufficient in itself to control the mind. You have to have a higher focus of intelligence. You have to begin meditation on the Absolute Truth. Until then, your mind can still start jumping around. You may calm it down, but anything can set it off again. You know, just exposure to sense gratification will re-agitate the mind. So, after practicing pranayama, subduing the mind, one has to progress to the pratyahara stage and then to begin dharana, focusing the mind on a transcendental object. Otherwise, you won't be able to actually conquer the mind. And it says, shubharte dharaye diya. One should, the last line is beginning to describe the process of dharana, the sixth of the eight steps. That means to start concentrating the mind on the Absolute Truth. There are two stages of meditation, or three stages, dharana, dhyana, and samadhi. The first stage, the general stage of meditation, is called dharana, focusing the mind. But it says here, Shukadev says, shubharte, on shubha-artha, that means the all-auspicious transcendental object. And what is that all-auspicious object of focus? That's the, according to Vishwanath Chakravarti on this verse, that's the personal form of the Supreme Lord on the body of God. The Supersoul, or Lord Vishnu's personal transcendental body. That's the object, proper object of meditation. Okay, verse 19. I'm sorry we're rushing and not stopping for questions, but we have to cover the chapter. We won't be able to finish the chapter today, but I'm trying to cover as much of it as I can.
Tatraika vayavam dhyayed avyavuchena chetasa mano nirvishayam yuktva tatakinchana nasmarit padam tat paramam vishnur mano yatra prasidati.
This is the next stage. Stage number 7. Dhyana. This is concentrated meditation. Now, what's the difference? This is explained by Sridhar Swami. Dharana, or general meditation, is to look at the form of God. But just look at the whole body, not to focus on particular parts of it. It's an unfocused, or, you know, general meditation. On the form of the Lord. Deity form, or the Supersoul in your heart, if you're an advanced yogi.
And then the next day is dhyana, concentrated meditation, is when you systematically meditate on the different parts of the body of God one by one, beginning with his feet. That's according to Sridhar Swami, that's what dhyana is. What it actually is in the meditation system. 5 minutes? And then, this verse also describes the last stage, samadhi. Nirvishayam mano yuktva. The mind is completely free from sense attraction, and it's completely fixed on that absolute truth. That's samadhi. Firm, solid, undeviating meditation. That means, according to Sridhar Swami, this is the stage at which the all-blissful personal form of the Lord becomes completely fixed in the heart. No way that Krishna can get out of your heart. You've captured him. And then, mano yatra prasidati. Then the mind becomes calm and satisfied. Once and for all. Okay, let's look at verse 20. Did I read the translation of this one? 19? I think I read the Sanskrit and I didn't read the translation. I'll read the translation of 19 and then we'll read 20. I'm sorry. Thereafter you should meditate upon the limbs of Vishnu, one after another, without being deviated from the conception of the complete body. Thus the mind becomes free from all sense objects. There should be no other thing to be thought upon. Because the Supreme Personality of Godhead Vishnu is the ultimate truth, the mind becomes completely reconciled in him only. So Prabhupada has also said that this is, although the verse does not say Vishnu, it doesn't say form body of God, it just says, meditate on the absolute truth. One avaya can mean limb, it can also mean just syllable of a word, of a mantra, whatever. Or actually, ek avayam can mean one syllable. It can mean the syllable om. Ek avayava. But Prabhupada is saying, no, it means meditate on the body of Vishnu, one part of his body at a time. But it's not some sectarian idea. This is your Krishna conscious interpretation. This goes back to Sridhar Swami. It's not just the Gaudiya Sampradaya, but even Sridhar Swami is giving, just like we read from his commentary, this means meditation systematically on Lord Vishnu's body, limb after limb, systematically. And then verse 20? Okay. Rajastamobhyam akshiptam vimudham mana atmanaha yadashe dharanaya diro antriyat tatkritam malam. One's mind is always agitated by the passionate mode of material nature and bewildered by the ignorant mode of nature. But one can rectify such conceptions by the relationship of Vishnu and thus become pacified by cleansing the dirty things created by them. So there's a problem of the influence of the mode of passion and of ignorance. Passion agitates the mind and ignorance clouds it, bewilders it. And until you reach the stage of samadhi, you're always in danger of getting under the influence of passion and ignorance. And as long as you're still influenced by passion or ignorance, you can't, with complete focus, meditate on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That goes for those who are practicing this yoga system. It goes for us also. Now, as long as we're still allowing ourselves to be influenced by passion and ignorance, we can't be completely Krishna conscious. Okay, one last verse, and then we'll stop for the day. And that will leave us at the point where Parikshit then asks another question. So verse 21. Yasyam sandaryamanayam yogino bhakti lakshanaha ashu sampadyate yogo ashrayam badram ikshataha. So by practicing this meditation, 8 steps that have just been described, the yoga system, a devotional yoga system, one attains the desired perfection. What is this system, actually? Bhakti Lakshana Yoga. Yoga that's got the qualities of bhakti. So, Vishnu Chakravarti specifies this means it's bhakti mishra yoga. This is the practice of those who are yogis, who want to merge with the Supreme and want to do it by meditating. But they've got some attraction to devotion. They've got some appreciation of the value of the devotional method. Bhakti mishra, mishra mixed. It's yoga mixed with bhakti. Not bhakti mixed with yoga, but primarily yoga mixed with bhakti. That's what's being what was just described in those verses. Okay, according to Vishnu Chakravarti. The purpose of it and the goal, the success of it is liberation. Not pure love of God. But that, even that liberation is not achieved without some taste, some trace of devotion, of bhakti. No, that's different. When it's primarily, you're primarily a yogi, and you've got a little bit of bhakti in you, that's bhakti mishra yoga. When you're mostly a devotee and you still have some trace of yoga propensities, then that's yoga mishra bhakti. They're different. So there's a lower stage. The yogi who's on the verge of becoming a devotee. Liberation is what they achieve. It's not really impersonal. They'll merge into God's body, and they're good candidates to make further progress. Unless they get distracted by some Mayavadi or some nonsense, they can become devotees. That purification will make them qualified to begin pure devotional service. Yes, it is a gradual process. A yogi, some people are yogis. If a yogi becomes a bhakti mishra yoga, if his yoga gets mixed up with, gets some taste of bhakti in it, that bhakti is more powerful than yoga. If he properly cultivates the bhakti can take over. And he can become a pure devotee. If he's lucky. If he's honest and sincere and lucky. Okay, we have to evacuate the room. Sorry, and if we can discuss, if anybody has any questions, we'll have to go downstairs, not to disturb anybody in the class. Oh wait, pass these out quickly. This is chapter 2 and 3. Is this only 2? Yeah, this is chapter 2. Homework for tonight is to read this chapter 2.